Hello, you're very welcome to the first Your Politics podcast of 2026. I'm Áine Lawler and I'm joined by Joe McGraelich and Micheál Lehane from the RTE Politics team here at Leinster House. And while the Dáil's not back until next week, Joe, there's been lots of political backwards and forwards, even intercontinentally, over the Mercosur trade deal, which it feels like we've been talking about forever. It's going on for two decades now, and it's coming up to vote time, and the Taoiseach has finally told us from Shanghai we're voting no.
Yes, happy 2026, Áine. I hope the Christmas was good.
It was.
And we're right back at it. The Dáil isn't back for another week, but obviously the Mercosur deal, this has been around for a very, very long time, as you said there. In fact, it goes right back to 1999. MEPs that we have been and gone on behalf of Ireland to the European Parliament were dealing with this 25 years ago nearly. And it has finally now come to pass. The deal was negotiated. It has been something that Irish farmers have been concerned about throughout because of who you're dealing with here. Brazil, which is the biggest beef producer in the world, Argentina and the other countries in Mercosur. So, as we know, when the government was formed, it was something that the independents were particularly worried about. And indeed, I was talking to one of the independent members who said to me that it was a core part of the negotiations to put the government together that there would be this clause in relation to Mercosur, and that is that they would make sure that it works properly for Irish farmers and that Irish farmers are defended in terms of the current proposals of Mercosur at the time.
And these are amended proposals that were supposed to provide extra guarantees for countries like Ireland that had doubts, and we're not the only EU country that has doubts. We'll talk about that in a moment. But it's not enough, say the farmers, and Michael Healy-Ray certainly agrees.
Yeah, and Michael Healy-Ray went over the line in many ways yesterday, saying that the Taoiseach's comments were unhelpful when he had said in China that progress had been made. I suppose giving an indication that perhaps there was an inclination there to vote yes, but that wasn't a runner on any level, whether it's the independents or indeed the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party were not keen on that idea.
So I had understood, or was that just a dastardly rumour, that the quid pro quo for Ireland getting the nitrates derogation extended was that we would hold our nose and accept these amendments and vote in favour of Mercosur at the European Council.
Yeah, I think that was certainly the understanding, and one would suspect that perhaps the indications from government to the Commission President would have been along those lines. Indeed, at one point yesterday was being said, could the derogation be scrutinised again if Ireland were to vote no? But they, after about 3 o'clock in the morning, it became clear that there was no possibility of being able to get this through the government at so many different levels. Although there are some who do look to wider trade issues and say that it would be beneficial, but it just wasn't going to cut it. And Michael Healy-Ray, I suppose, was to the fore on that in the early part, but there's great sensitivity in Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael about that, because they themselves say that they had huge levels of opposition as well. And of course, the official reason cited is that this is all about food standards, but I think domestic politics plays a big part in it. And when it comes to the quid pro quo, I mean, the lead on from that is very clear, isn't it? If you kind of don't play ball, that you could get a clip from Europe at some point somewhere down the line. I think that is accepted politically, although people like the independents talking today say you have to look at this in isolation. But of course, politics never works in isolation.
And it's not just the independents, Micheál. You said the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party, it too, was there a majority? I mean, could Micheál Martin have gotten this through his own parliamentary party?
Well, as I understand it, it was communicated to Micheál Martin that he wouldn't be able to get it through his parliamentary party. I think there was a similar enough view in Fine Gael. But Simon Harris was quick to get around to the view that this wasn't a runner and this wouldn't be popular anyway. Although with the European presidency in sight and all that, Ireland is going to go on to the naughty step on this. But it's something that just had to be done.
And of course, the argument in favour, and there are a number, particularly of the bigger economies like Germany and the European Union, Joe, and they're saying, look, in an era of Trump tariffs, and, you know, fears about being over-dependent on China, this creates a common market with South America, the potential for trade, for jobs. And what we're talking about is 99,000
tons of beef.
Of Brazilian beef. That's 1.5% of EU beef production. But that argument didn't carry any truck with the IFA.
Yeah, and I mean, there's obviously the irony of the fact is that Micheál Martin is dealing with this from China, where he's actually on a mission to improve trade links. And we've been talking about the issue of reducing tariffs and dealing with tariffs for the last year since Trump came back into the White House. And that's what this was all about. This was about removing tariffs from the already very substantial trade that we have with South America. It's to remove or reduce tariffs so much on something like 90% of that trade. So it was going to be hugely significant. And as you said, very significant for other products and other countries. Germany and Italy, in terms of the automobile industry, chemical industry, pharma from Ireland, also then wines, olive oil, all of that kind of thing. All of these issues are huge in other countries, not the issues for us in this country necessarily, although pharma, of course, is very important. But in terms of the farming lobby and the way they view this was, if you go down this route, you're opening it up. It's potentially the narrow end of the wedge. If the beef that they're producing in these countries is not to the same standard as Ireland, and of course the timing was coincidental but very, very apt in terms of the arguments this week about beef coming through the system from Brazil that actually had antibiotics in it, which was sold into the system and consumed here in Ireland.
And that's
despite the checks. Yeah, despite the checks.
And that's a food
safety
issue.
Yeah. All of those issues came to the fore. And then there's the environmental issue as well about producing beef and maybe clearing rainforest in South America in order to produce beef again. So an uneven playing field. And it's something that farmers here have been arguing very strongly, and not just in Ireland, but in France and in Italy and other countries as well. But unfortunately, from their perspective, there isn't enough, it seems, of a minority bloc, enough to make a minority bloc when this goes for a vote tomorrow amongst the EU ambassadors.
It's interesting too that Thomas is just trying to spread it out today, saying that it's not just an agriculture issue, that it's a consumer issue, and when it comes to standards around food, that is something that affects people in urban areas as well. I think as the days go by, that could become a harder sell. He's also saying that you have to listen to citizens when it comes to making these decisions. But of course, it's a long way off. Edmund Burke and the famous Bristol letter that you elect me for my judgment, not to please you. Government on this one went out to please its backbenchers and the forces that it feared a backlash.
So is the Mercosur deal likely to go through? It's going to be voted on at the European Council. To stop it there, it will take the votes from four countries representing 35% of the European population. Is that likely to happen?
That bit is likely, yes. And then there is the final play, and that keeps the protests alive, the huge protest that is planned for Athlone, which Michael Healy-Ray said he's going to attend on Saturday, because there is the European Parliament vote in about a fortnight, and I suppose that's a straight vote, majority vote. And the expectation is that it would be ratified by the Parliament, but no one absolutely guaranteeing that either.
And this is hugely important, isn't it, to the Commission, and particularly to Commission President van der Leyen. I mean, there was all this talk back in December when the vote was supposed to happen in the first place, that she'd be on the first plane to Brazil and the treaty would be signed as soon as it went through. Could this be derailed still at the last minute,
well,
do you think?
I mean, this is the thing. It shows you the sensitivity that was there, and it was all about the place in December as this was approaching. And, of course, we were also dealing with the nitrates thing at that time. But the vote at the time was postponed again because Italy was particularly concerned about aspects of it. There was a plan for Ursula von der Leyen to jump on the plane. There was a plan again for Ursula von der Leyen to jump on the plane this coming Monday, apparently. Whether that happens now or not, I'm not entirely sure. Obviously, it's still, if the vote goes through as it's expected to go through, there isn't the it will get the qualified majority that it needs, which is the 65%. Mm-hmm. Representing 65% of the population and 15 countries, but because it's now become such a lightning rod issue again, and even Simon Harris was talking about it when you were talking to him earlier on in government buildings, Micheál, about you cannot discount the views of the democratic representatives of the people in the European Parliament as well. And they're going to be all about this for the next couple of weeks.
And you'd very much imagine that Emmanuel Macron, who's got his own troubles trying to steer his government and trying to get a budget through his parliament, that he'd be very aware of the opposition coming on this one.
And if he's not aware, all he has to do is look around Paris today. In the snow, he can see the farmers blocking the roads into the city, into the capital city of France, and making their protests very, very loud.
So the Taoiseach and the government is doing what the independents and the backbenchers and the farmers want. But the fact that they can't deliver on something they were clearly expected to be able to deliver by the Commission, by Europe, does that signal that this is a lame duck Taoiseach right at the start of 2026?
Well, it shows that there was a great fear in government about this. And I think you look at Micheál Martin's comments yesterday, there did seem to be a desire there, and that's understandable, that progress could be made and this could be worked.
Because he was ambiguous yesterday and it was ruled out today. Mm. And the belief is it was the pressure from home, it was those messages from the independents that tipped the balance.
Yeah, the independents and his own party as well, that this wasn't a runner. And you would think that the entire presidential debacle was out of the way. But when you hear critics this morning sending out the message to Micheál Martin, people like John McGuinness and others, Michael Healy-Ray was citing it as well, talking about his solo judgment calls when it came to that issue, that he couldn't do so again. So that's still there. And I think it does present a difficulty.
So he's going to be, is he, in 2026 compared with 25, a much more reined-in Taoiseach, is he, after the Jim Gavin debacle?
Yeah, that is how it looks like. And of course, there are two electoral
collective
contests.
Decision, though, of course.
Yeah, collective decision-making.
Democracy in action.
There are two electoral contests coming up as well. And nobody in the two big parties are under any illusion that they're going to be a walk in the park for them at all. But they're also smarting still from the very strong messages delivered in the presidential election. And I think that is all informing the entire approach now to the way they're going to move forward with issues like this. If a commitment was given, then the commitment has to be honoured, and there's no room for slipping around it or anything like that, because that'll be called out. And indeed, as we've heard this morning on the national airwaves on Morning Ireland, you know, that was a message that was coming clear from members of the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party as well.
I think it's interesting, kind of privately, people indicating that when you look across the parties and you look at younger TDs, mm-hmm. there's a lot of younger TDs in this Dáil, that in some ways they are extremely conservative when it comes to things like risk and are very risk averse. And that is interesting.
They haven't been burned by the fire of pensioners' protests or unpopular decisions.
Or facing really difficult times like that. So that makes the job even difficult when it comes to tricky ones like this.
Mind you, there's the whole other side to this as well, which is, if it's going to go through anyway, Ireland is burning political capital in terms of its European colleagues and the other European governments. Even if we were to abstain on it, if it's going to go through anyway, that might be somehow have assuaged some of the protest at home. But if it looks like it's going to go through, we're going to be voting no. It certainly does blot the copybook a little bit ahead of our presidency of the European Union in July.
And that's one of the big political questions about 2026, isn't it, Micheál? Because this sounds very much, you know, coming from government, and I use government with a small g, right across official government, the institutions of government as well. Mm. This is the highlight of their year. They've been working towards it for so long. There are so many issues now on the European plate. You know, we've been talking about Mercosur, but, you know, you could talk about Greenland, you can talk about Ukraine, you can talk about competitiveness, you can talk about all of those issues. Hugely important, big decisions coming there. And yet, however important it is to government, I'm not sure that ordinary voters, and it depends on how ordinary voters, you know, how frustrated they're going to go on being over rising rents, rising housing costs, maybe some signs that inflation, finally food inflation, is starting to fall slowly, but cost of living is still a huge issue for so many people. And I'm just wondering, is there a risk if the presidency itself could be a dangerous distraction for politics from delivering the domestic agenda?
Yeah, because there's a lot to do there, isn't there? And a lot has to be done quickly, whether it's the rent reforms, that legislation has to go through. Then there's also the immigration reforms. And of course, there's all this big planning promises. And you look at things like this week, Jim O'Callaghan's changes to the judicial review. All that is kind of the big stuff that if you are going to tackle the overriding problems in the economy, one is it's that rising cost of living and also that inability of huge numbers of people to ever own a home. They won't pay much heed to Ireland's EU presidency.
Not to mention the Defence Act, the triple lock legislation, mm-hmm. and the Occupied Territories still, Bill as well. All of that, which is still on the boil as well, and that has to be dealt with by the government. And that is both of those are going to lead to massive rounds, mm-hmm. and massive debates. So it might well be a distraction, but it might well lead to a concentration of government firepower on these issues in the immediate few months ahead of us.
Yeah. One the only area thing about the timing is that if it does go into May and that, and you have the EU presidency coming soon after it, I think government, as the Forum Book illustrates, would suggest government loses both by-elections and when they can push it aside and brush it aside coming into the summer break and focus on the
and
second half of the year.
And then you've got all those very nice photo opportunities and you're looking very important and there can be a bounce back from that. There's some confusion coming from government about what to do about the facility that Grok, the AI app that you can access via X, and it has the capacity, if you ask it, to be able to take a photograph, a perfectly respectable photograph of an individual, even a child, and you can ask Grok to undress that photograph, that image, and it will undress that image for you. And there are various examples. This is an issue that's kind of blown up out of the blue this week, actually, but it's hit a nerve, and it's hit a nerve with calls on the government to act against X and act against Grok on this one. Also to leave the platform that is allowing this to happen. Do we need new laws? Is the law already being broken? And at the same time as all of this, Joe, Grok is topping the charts of apps at the moment.
Yeah, apparently Grok is the number one downloaded app in Ireland today. That's according to one of the national newspapers anyway. But yes, on top of all of the concerns that have been there about social media and about children and young people's access to it, all of the tidal waves of concern that have been there for a number of years now, this issue has jumped to the fore today, and I think it's become, it's shocking in the extreme to imagine this happening, but I think it has crystallised an awful lot that really, finally, there has to be something done to tackle the companies that are making this available. So, we see Niamh Smith, who's the minister responsible for this, she's seeking a meeting with X now. She's stating very clearly that production of this material is certainly in terms of children, whether it's real or whether it's imagery that's dreamed up by AI, is an offence, and it is against the law, and it can lead to prison sentences. And along with that, then there is, the constant debate about how do you make these companies culpable? How do you make them take responsibility for what they're doing? And that is where it's all at. Is it at the EU Commission level with the Digital Services Act? Is it at Commission Demand level here? Is it at the Garda level? Is it Department of Justice? All of these questions need to be answered, and they need to be sorted out, because I think this really is the idea that, children's pictures, or somebody can take a picture of a girl, put it up on there, and then add an imagined body, nudified, etc., etc. That really is gone beyond the pale.
The acronym here is CSAM, Child Sexual Abuse Material. And Minister O'Donovan, Communications Minister Patrick O'Donovan Micheál, a few weeks ago he was, very gung-ho about tackling the whole issue of child safety on the internet, and this was all around the government backing for the idea of age limits, and this would involve digital ID. And even though there were a lot of concerns raised about, whether this would give media companies access to people's ID and so on. So that debate was going on. But when it comes to this capacity to generate CSAM, the minister is saying, well, it's not X really that's the problem. The problem is with the people who are making the images. And he's also saying that even if we needed to change the laws, and there's some argument about whether we have enough laws already, he's saying, young people, and he was speaking at the Young Scientists, young people are able to, move much faster. The technology can move faster than the laws can keep up. Similar concerns being expressed by the Taoiseach in China when asked about this. Billy Kelleher saying EU already has the power actually to stop this while they investigate. This looks like quite a debate.
Yeah, and government kind of know that there isn't a lot they can do, and if they're to do anything, it has to be kind of on an EU basis. At the same time, there are different tones coming there. And I think the word from the minister was that people can always work around these things. And of course, that is informed by the fact that in Australia, young people, when it comes to just benign using even of social media platforms, that they're banned from.
The age ban,
but everyone has a workaround for that. But this couldn't be more serious in some ways. And of course, there have been calls on the guards to investigate as well, that there are adequate laws in place already. Then there is that wider question of government and should they stay on X or not. And again, they're citing that that would have to be a collective decision whether to come off it or not.
Which all brings you back to whether there's a willingness to face up to American tech companies, what gets you involved in, whether you're willing to face up to Donald Trump and his White House at the moment, because he seems to feel his writ runs all over the world whenever he wants at the moment.
And it kind of goes back to the base principle of the idea that all of these platforms are platforms and not publishers, and that they're able to not take responsibility for whatever it is that goes out there. And we've seen that with Elon Musk, you know, his reaction to complaints that are made to him about what's on the platform and the arguments about free speech and free expression and all the rest of it. But if they're not held responsible as publishers, then, you know, they can walk away from it, essentially. And you are correct then, if the, you know, the EU goes after them, if Ireland goes after them, then you're going to run up against the writ of Donald Trump and the views of the United States at the moment that everything is permissible and it's all down to personal responsibility, etc. So, you know, it's not
easy White House meeting for Micheál Martin once again. Again, you'll have to refer back to his father's great tactical boxing abilities if he's going to get through this one.
Again, the situation moving so fast, the Greenland row, who knows, but it does look like it'll be a pretty difficult march for him, all right, if of course he gets the invitation. That's the other thing. Let's wrap this up, Micheál. Peter Burke, what's he been saying about Catherine Martin, the former minister, and her policy on tourism?
Well, now that Peter Burke has control of tourism and he says it's the biggest indigenous industry, he has noticed that there was a lack of political direction influenced by green policy when it comes to trying to get visitors from certain parts of the world, long-distance visitors in particular. He's talking about India, United Arab Emirates, and the Asia-Pacific region. And he said he's going to change all that. He's getting boots on the ground, and he's going to try and get more direct flights from those regions, because these people can come in here. There mightn't be huge numbers, but they will spend a lot of money. And he thinks, too, that that would help expand the tourist season from St. Bridget's Day to Halloween. So the €77 million being made available to try and get more visitors from these regions in particular.
And does the minister believe there was some kind of ideological objection?
He does. He thinks it was green policy and, of course, long-haul flights and the like. And I think he has mentioned things like the expo in Japan and how there wasn't a huge emphasis on Irish tourism and representatives there to get those people to hop on a plane and fly into Shannon.
And has the Taoiseach been saying something about plans to lift the Dublin airport cap, I think, as well? There are plans for that in the pipeline.
Yeah, the plans are in the pipeline already. The Taoiseach was asked about it in Shanghai, and he said that the legislation has been drafted. So that's it's an interesting one, really. That's where the government have recognised that there's a problem getting planning permissions for big infrastructure projects or the like. So they're going to draft specific legislation on this particular one, and that will take care of the airport cap, which actually isn't actually in effect at the moment anyway, because there's a European Union.
That's right, there's a legal challenge and all of that.
So it's very different to where things were when the Greens were in government. Now it's the common good and common sense, isn't it? All the while there was €300 million to help companies decarbonise in that capital plan from Enterprise announced by Peter Burke yesterday.
And of course we had Darragh O'Brien saying we wouldn't be meeting. I think we're going to be, how far short? We're aiming for 50% and we'll cut on emissions by 2030, and we're going to get, what, about half of that?
Less than half, I think.
Yeah. But we're going to do it all in the 30s, isn't that right?
Facing €28 billion in fines, which I don't think anybody across the European Union really believes are going to be levied now at this stage, because the targets have been missed, not just in Ireland, but in many places.
All changed, changed utterly.
It's going to be interesting when the tourism season gets going in the 1st of February, actually. That'll be a departure. Not that, of course, there are plenty of visitors around at the moment, as far as I can see as well.
And on that note, will we just say Happy New Year, everybody?
Happy New Year.
Oh, God, you sound so delighted.
It's going to be a great 2026.
On that note, goodbye.